The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. It's great to be with you. Hard to believe we're already at the final program of the week. We're going to need to add a weekend edition with as much as we're trying to get through in these five programs per week. My father has a coworker letter coming out, I believe, later today, or at least it will be sent later today, and it's an expansion of that trumpet brief that went out on Monday. So again, some exciting content. And I just wanted to start with a statement he makes at the end of the letter, talking about how important God's work is during these dark times that we're in. He says it's critical in this end time that somebody gets light out to this world. Many in America are in despair because of the election, on top of the coronavirus, economic woes. He says, but we must not despair. We can know God's prophecies and watch as he fulfills his purposes. It says the nation and the world is about to be shocked by what happens, but you will not be. When these prophecies come to pass, you will be able to recognize God's guiding hand. Excuse me. So when you see God's involvement, as we've been talking all week, even when you know that what's going on all around us is chaotic and evil, so much of it, through and through, and yet God's purpose stands. God is fulfilling his purpose, and it's important for us to be just filled with joy and with light. And so later on today, hopefully I can get into a few scriptures on the subject of light, the light specifically that Jesus brought into this dark world. Now men rejected it, but we in the church, we as God's people, we are the light of this world. So that's coming up in just a bit. As for the news, how about if we start with some good comedic wit, shall we? This is clip 20.
Election officials calling the 2020 election the most secure in American history.
Secure in American history. The election, how many days ago? 9, 10 days? And already, the Department of Homeland Security, you see CNN running with it. I mean, this was the most secure election in the history. I guess all 45 presidential elections, or now 46. And this was the most secure. Do you believe it? This is the DHS. It says the November 3rd election. That's just last week, and they already know this. The November 3rd election was the most secure in American history. He says, listen to this. This is from the government, the Department of Homeland Security. There is no evidence that any voting system deleted or lost votes, changed votes, or was in any way compromised. There is no evidence. And so there they are. This is deep. The deep state runs deep. There's no evidence. And this is what you hear in the echo chamber. Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? Meanwhile, there's piles and piles of evidence in courtrooms in Michigan and Pennsylvania. All of these witnesses, all of these sworn testimonies, just to take one point alone, just the fact that Republican poll watchers were not allowed to observe, that in itself, if you have a sound-minded judge, that in itself could overturn some of these results. Now there's corrupt judges in the land as well. But the most secure, you heard it first on CNN. There's Don Lemon. The most secure election in history. In history. Now, you may have heard this week, the pick that Biden made for his chief of staff, Ronald Klain, I believe is his name. And he tweeted out, I believe back in 2014, that elections in the United States are rigged. I mean, it's just a simple fact. And then, of course, you know what, and by the way, he also made a tweet earlier this year. This is a separate point altogether. But it says here, the virus attacks humans. This is February 28th. Vice President Biden's new chief of staff. It says, the virus, speaking of COVID-19, attacks humans, not people in any ethnicity, race. Fear is hurting Chinese-American-owned businesses baselessly. Let's fight the disease and let's fight prejudice. So, in other words, get out there. Get out there. I mean, we've got to go to Chinatown. Same thing that Nancy Pelosi was saying. And de Blasio. Let's go out for the parades and so on. And then they want to say how President Trump mishandled everything. Well, look at their early statements in February and even early March. In any event, he believes, this is the new chief of staff for Joe Biden, the fake president. He believes that, well, elections are rigged. And then that statement was 2014, the one previous to the tweet I just gave to you. And then you go to 2016, and I mean the problems with the election there. But this one was perfect. This one had no problems. This one was 100% secure. Here's some more comedy gold from Adam Schiff, clip 5.
The one thing you can rely on with Donald Trump is he will do what's in his personal interest. He doesn't care what it means to the country. And if he can sabotage the next administration, he will do it.
If he can sabotage the next administration, Donald Trump will do it. That's Adam Schiff. He's part of the team that for 4 years worked to sabotage the administration of Donald Trump. It starts with the Steele dossier. Well, before that, as you'll hear here in a moment, they didn't accept the immediate results of that election. And this is history that a lot of people forget, how that Hillary and she used Jill Stein. You'll hear this in just a moment. But they did not accept those immediate results. I mean, even the count. They thought there was foul play there back in November of 2016. Then, of course, you had all of these reports that came out. Once it set in that Donald Trump was going to be president, then on comes this intelligence report by John Brennan that, oh, Russia was involved. Russia helped Donald Trump. The election was rigged. And then comes the Steele dossier, a total fraud of a document. That was in January, just days before President Trump was inaugurated. And for 4 years, the dossier, of course, led to the special investigation, Robert Mueller, all the thing in between with Jim Comey getting fired and then leaking to the New York Times. Everybody was in on it. Here comes Mueller. He's got tens of millions of dollars, all of these radical Democrat attorneys attacking the president for years, and then from there to Ukraine, and then from that to the sham impeachment, and then the attack using COVID-19, and then all of the fraud last week. And it continues. The DHS, yeah, no evidence of any, not even one single vote. Nothing. No evidence whatsoever. Now, let me, as far as legitimacy is concerned, or even the president's right to call for a recount or to take something to court, let me take you back to November. And as you watch this montage, just look at some of the dates at the top right, I believe it is, and you see how deep it went into November, all through the month of November. Where are we at today? November 13th. And even when there were... This was when there actually was no evidence of a fraudulent election. They were still trying to look into any opportunity they could find to turn over the results from 2016. Here's clip 19.
Do you think Donald Trump's win was legitimate?
Protect the lives
of those. Election legit?
The election was tainted by this intrusion.
I don't see this president-elect as a legitimate president.
You do not consider him a legitimate president.
Does he think that Democrats should put this away, this whole idea of legitimate, illegitimate?
The president's not going to get in the middle of this right now.
I get it, but you didn't answer the question. Yeah. Is Donald Trump legitimate?
I think there's a cloud of questions around what happened and his ties to Russia.
There could be clouds of questions, and we disagree on things, but honestly, I mean, yes or no, is he the legitimately elected president of the United States when he raises his hand?
We're counting on our law enforcement community to get to the bottom of these questions. He also won't.
Do you agree with John Lewis? Do you agree that Donald Trump is, in effect, not a legitimate president?
I think that there's no question that the process that elected him was not legitimate.
Do you agree with John Lewis on what
yes.
point?
That the president-elect, although legally elected, is not legitimate for all the reasons.
Okay.
Do you believe, Congressman, that Donald Trump will be a legitimate president?
The legitimacy questions come up.
You say he will be president of the United States, but you're at least reluctant to say he will be the legitimate president of the United States. Is that right?
Figuratively, he is going to be president.
But isn't it more difficult now to work together when you've said flatly he's not even a legitimate president?
No,
I don't recognize his legitimacy. John Lewis said that.
John Lewis said that. No,
you believe he's a legitimate president?
Well, he was elected.
On the fact that Donald Trump can't stand hearing that somehow he's not a legitimate president.
And
that he won fewer votes than Hillary Clinton.
Can't bear to tell him the truth.
And now the delegitimization of the presidency is taking hold within the country.
Do you think it was a legitimate election?
I think that there are lots of questions about its legitimacy.
The 2016 election wasn't legitimate. What does it mean to say it's not legitimate? It's not a legitimate election.
Chris,
you think it was a legitimate election? All the time here, Donna, my question to you is, was it a legitimate election? Does it count?
My personal view is that it was not a legitimate election.
So it doesn't count?
So it doesn't count? We're having trouble with our video, but you can hear all of that was discussion throughout November of 2016. For a full month, almost. And then there was the discussion about the Electoral College and that maybe they should vote against the will of the people in December of 2016 because Donald Trump was so crazy. He was a Russian agent, after all. All of that was going on just in the last election cycle. And now to hear them all lecturing Americans about the legitimacy and how that a couple of court cases and a recount is somehow calling into question the legitimacy of the American democracy. Everything that he's doing, the president, is well within his right. It's well within the bounds of American law. But there you are. They didn't accept the result in 2016, and they still don't, as I've been saying this week. And you see it over and again, even in the smaller races like Stacey Abrams. They won't accept defeat. I got an email from one of our listeners who comes from Zimbabwe, and he knows a little bit of something about rigged elections because he saw it as a young man growing up in that nation. He said here, over the last couple of weeks, I haven't been able to help but be shocked at how much America in this moment reminds me of Zimbabwe. It's like I said earlier this week. You see all of this evidence coming in, all of these eyewitnesses about the ballot stuffing, the bundles of Biden-onlys, the whistleblowers coming forward to say that the post office, the postal service, was telling them to backdate ballots so that they could be dated November 3rd. All of these things, you remember, I just heard this yesterday from some commentator who talked about how that in the lead up to the election, you remember it was the Democrats who were saying, oh, Donald Trump's going to use the post office. He's going to use the post office to cheat. And look at how all of the cheating, including at the post office, has gone in the direction of, in favor of Joe Biden. Every bit of it It all flows in the same direction. Anyway, this listener from Zimbabwe, he says, I vividly remember how every election year we would lament how the system lent itself to vote rigging because of how long it took for the votes to be counted. It says, we knew that President Robert Mugabe was stealing, and we wished for a system like the one in America where results would be counted and reported efficiently and immediately. We knew that delaying the results was for the express purpose of rigging the elections if the results weren't going their way, which they never did. But the media never said a word. As he brings out here, the media are complicit. They're aiding and abetting it. The media never said a word and acted like the elections were free and fair, promoting what President Mugabe and his allies all said. See, it's like a state-run media, but it's certainly not being run by the current president. It's the radical leftist Democrat media complex. They're all part of the same crime family. You know, Brad McDonald sent out that trumpet brief last night, and he made the point there that with as much corruption that is there to be revealed, I mean, this is like Pulitzer Prize award-winning material. You could be the 2020 Woodward and Bernstein. If someone was curious enough and honest enough to go uncover the corruption. As it is, it's just the Trump administration and his lawyers. That's about it. Everyone else, no evidence. They're not even curious. They won't even go and seek out some of these individuals that have given sworn affidavits. Their objective is to cover it all up. They're part of the coup. They're part of the coup attempt. I think I heard Mark Levin yesterday make the same point. He was referring to some election in Illinois, I believe, back in the 1980s, and said that one reason it was revealed, the corruption, was because back then you had a more honest news media that actually wanted to get in there and expose the evil. Today, though, they want to cover it up. And Mr. McDonald, in his trumpet brief, he went through Isaiah 59, just a fascinating study, and brought in some different translations and such, and you see the evil and the scheming and the plotting that goes on behind closed doors. We saw all of that last week. And yet, where are the media to come forward as the guardians of truth? Here they are running, and of course the government, the deep state, they're totally in cahoots with one another. Here's Don Lemon. He's happy to repeat what the DHS said. This was the most secure election in U.S. history. A total lie, an audacious lie. And that's the way it is in this world of darkness. Satan, like my father keeps saying, he wants to blot out Israel. He wants to blot out our history. And here come the Democrats now, this time around, just 4 years later, and it's like they're blotting out the history from just 4 months ago, certainly four years ago. Well, this delegitimizes the office of the presidency and the American democracy to even have any delay. To have a delay of 1 week, well, this is, like you heard yesterday, this is like Hitler in the 1930s. This listener from Zimbabwe, he says, but the media never said a word and acted like the elections were free and fair, parroting what President Mugabe and his allies all said. He writes, I read a New York Times article that compared President Trump to Robert Mugabe. It's amazing how much it read like one of the state-owned media pieces from Zimbabwe. It, too, declared the elections here are free and fair. You see, they've decided, just like they decided on Saturday, Biden wins. And a couple days later, we've decided the election was, there's not only not that much fraud, not enough to turn it over in the direction of Trump. There was no fraud. No, and in fact, this was the most secure election in history. They say all this with a straight face. It's quoting the New York Times here. It says that when they do hold genuinely competitive votes and the result goes against them, this is the New York Times comparing Robert Mugabe to Donald Trump. They're taking a break from the Hitler comparisons just for a moment. It says here, when they do hold genuinely competitive votes and the results go against them, they often ignore the result, denouncing it as the work of traitors, criminals, and foreign saboteurs, and therefore invalid. By refusing to accept the results of last week's election and working to delegitimize the vote, Mr. Trump is following a similar strategy. And then our listener writes this. Actually, the New York Times is wrong. It says, in reality, what happens is that the media declares that the elections were free and fair, and that any dissent to the results is by sore losers, and it's a threat to democracy. He says, that's the exact strategy the left is carrying out here in America. I've lived through it all. I've lived through all this before, he says, many times. I never would have thought that I'd live through it in the land of the free. He now lives in the United States. He's one of our college students in Oklahoma. He's living through it in the land of the free. He's seen it play out like this before in his home country. A coup attempt. Through and through, my father writes this in the coworker letter that he's sending out later today. He writes about forces attacking America today that are terribly destructive, and the worst of them are within the nation. They come from within. We saw it through the transition in 2016 and then all through the Trump presidency, and none of this is to suggest that Donald Trump is a perfect man by any means. But these are radical, leftist, Marxist forces, and they want to destroy America as we know it. They, like Schumer said, we get Biden in, then we flip the two seats in Georgia, then we've got it. We've got it. We can change America. We can pack the courts. We can get rid of the Electoral College. We can add senators from Puerto Rico. We can do all these things and make sure that we maintain a stranglehold on power. This is what they want. They're drunk on power. And when they lose a bit of power, we get to see right away, as my father has written, just what they're willing to do to return to power. You mean after all that they've done these past 4 years, then we're supposed to come into the election, the most historic election in our history, said both sides, really. They were attacking, they were subverting, they were dealing, they would not accept it as legitimate. They thought he was Hitler. And then they come into this election and it was perfect. It was perfect. Nothing lawless. No votes thrown out. No computer glitches. It was secure. I mean, this was the most secure election in history. It's preposterous. To believe that, you have to have both eyes shut. You have to have both of your eyes locked shut. Satan's attacking the United States of America, and he's intervening, God is, where necessary to fulfill his purpose. And my father brings out in the coworker letter that we're just going to see miracles that astound us perhaps every week. That's in the new coworker letter that goes out. He writes, I don't know exactly how this will play out, but I believe God is allowing it to happen this way to ensure that the evil and the corruption in America are exposed. He says further on, we've made this point before about exposing, but he says further on in the piece, this is the coworker letter, the mainstream media insist there is no evidence Democrats tried to steal America's election. That is patently false. There's plenty of evidence, but it is also absurd when you think about what the left has been doing for the past several years. You would have to be naive not to think they are committing great frauds with this election. Look at all of the treasonous activity and behavior in the last 4 years. It's no problem for them to fraudulently come up with a few thousand votes here and there. Listen to Barack Obama. They're bringing him out. Remember, they're applying intense pressure on the president. They're not even talking about the evidence. They're not even talking about the lawsuits. They're not even talking about the affidavits. All that they're saying is, if he doesn't concede, then this is dangerous for the United States. This is dangerous. This is a 60 Minutes interview for this Sunday, I guess. And here's a little snippet that CBS let out, clip one.
What are these false claims of widespread election fraud doing to our country right now?
They appear to be motivated in part because the president doesn't like to lose and never admits loss. I'm more troubled by the fact that other Republican officials who clearly know better are going along with this, are humoring him in this fashion. It is one more step in delegitimizing not just the incoming Biden administration, but democracy generally. And that's a dangerous path.
That's Barack Obama on CBS, and you see how Scott Pelley set him up. What about these false claims? So right away, the premise is that it's just all false. There's nothing there. There's no evidence. And then Barack Obama, you know, it sounds like an angel of light. He comes with smooth-sounding words. And yet you examine the words and you examine the behavior. This man is a pathological liar. And the size of his ego, the vanity, the arrogance, as he comes forward talking about Donald Trump delegitimizing democracy, after all that this man did to destroy the institution of the presidency for 4 years to fundamentally transform the United States, even going back to his time in the White House, the contempt he has for the founders, for the traditions of America, for the constitutional law. But he's not in jail, and so many of the right-hand men that helped him out, Comey and Brennan and the others, they're not in jail, so they just continue. They just continue to get away with it. As one commentator said, these people are incredulous. You listen to them. You listen to Adam Schiff talk about sabotaging. You listen to these statements or the media talk about the most secure election in history. He's coming out, Barack Obama is, with his second memoir, his second autobiography, and like Tucker Carlson pointed out last night, he's in his 50s, I believe, mid-50s, late-50s, and he's already produced two autobiographies, and Tucker summed it up by saying, you know, the gist of this second one is that I'm a genius and you're a racist. He's the genius. And everybody in the United States, at least on the side of a Republican side or a conservative side, of course they're racist. This is an excerpt from the book. It says, "It was as if my very presence in the White House had triggered a deep-seated panic, a sense that the natural order had been disrupted." These are some of Barack Obama's reflections. Voted in by a predominantly white America, by a landslide in 2008. Then he wins re-election. Two four-year terms. He says this in his book, "For millions of Americans spooked by a black man in the White House, he promised an elixir," Donald Trump did, "an elixir for their racial anxiety." Translation being, anyone and everyone who voted for Donald Trump is a racist. So I'm the genius, and you're the racist. So if that's the case, how do you explain You start. I've been wanting to crunch some of the numbers, separate and apart from the cheating that went on last week, to just talk about the gains that the Republicans made in the House, holding on to the Senate. I know there's the two runoffs coming up in January. But then also just looking at the percentages from the exit polls, and in particular, how many black people voted for Donald Trump, and how it was a significant increase over 2016. So the question is, how does Donald Trump, the racist in chief, how does he perhaps double the amount of support coming from the black community? How does he do that in 4 years? It's a good question. Joe Scarborough, the left winger over at MSNBC, I believe this is from last Friday, so it's about a week old. But listen to this exchange on his program, clip 15.
Let me ask you this. You had said that the president has been racist, and of course, you're not alone. The majority of Americans, according to several polls over the last few years, have said that Donald Trump is in fact racist. So I have this question that I think a lot of people, a lot of civil rights leaders like you and a lot of Democratic politicians are going to have to grapple with. And that's a fact that a guy who has made common cause with the Proud Boys, with white nationalists, who drew praise from David Duke and Richard Spencer and others and neo-Nazis after Charlottesville, who's acted abhorrently and used race, actually, as a wedge issue, received 20% of the vote of black men, according to exit polls. Now,
20%. Of the vote. And what does it usually hover around? I think 9, 10, 11%. Overwhelmingly, the black community votes Democrat. This time, as much as 20%. We've been told for years that if any Republican comes along and gains significant increases in the black community, it's over for the Democrat candidate. It is over. This is yet another sign of just how much fraud went on last week. All of this support from the black community. And then, of course, you have all these, well, I won't even get into the ballots. I'll have to save it for another time. But 20%, it's not a majority by any means. It's not anywhere near half even. But that represents a significant increase. And there is Joe Scarborough talking to Al Sharpton, himself a racist, and asking him, how did this happen? Well, we've been saying that Trump is a racist for years, and he's got all of these white nationalists, he's got all these KKK supporters, and he brings up Charlottesville. I mean, just things they were going, oh, to anything and everything to sabotage that presidency. So how do you explain? Well, you can get into some of the policies and what the president actually did for the black community. All those rap singers, forget all their names, but in the lead up to the election, coming out and saying, hey, I support President Trump. Well, they can't explain this. All they can do is keep hurling away with their smear campaign. Victor Davis Hanson, the most secure election in history, really? Here's Victor Davis Hanson. It says, voting sanctity was not just questioned by Trump. It became a recent issue in 2016. Then Green Party candidate Jill Stein, you heard some of the montage earlier, was used as a surrogate by Hillary Clinton and the Democratic establishment to the chagrin of her own supporters, to sue in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania to overturn the 2016 election. The charge was deliberate voting machine irregularities for which there was not even much anecdotal evidence. Now you've got all of this anecdotal evidence and more. And the DHS comes out with their politically motivated announcement yesterday. Yeah, it was secure. The most secure in history. That's a bold-faced lie if ever there was one. It says here, when that failed, this is going back to 2016, when that failed, the left went full Hollywood with a media blitz to convince the American people that the election was a fraud and that and the electors had to do their patriotic duty to overturn the mandates of their own state and reject Donald Trump. They had to overturn the will of the people in the Electoral College in early December 2016. Hansen says, within days of that failure, a Democratic narrative appeared that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president due to Russian collusion. Soon Hillary Clinton joined the resistance. And on the basis that Russians, not the American people, had chosen the president, a charge that eventually sabotaged Donald Trump's first 2 years in office. Well, he goes into the Mueller report and all that. It says millions of voters now find it rich that suddenly the Democratic Party is vouching for a pristine voting count. Oh yeah, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. It was totally secure. Comedy gold, as I said earlier. It says here, activists spent much of 2019 and 20 seeking to overturn constitutionally mandated laws of the state legislatures. Their efforts in key states often succeeded in ensuring that federal elections would be radically transformed into a long process of weeks on end through both early and predominantly mail-in voting, with allowances for troves of ballots arriving well after the polls closed. See, they were planning for this for years. For years. They see how successful it's been in places like Zimbabwe. They know how to do it. They know how to cheat. Victor Davis Hanson says, now, 2 decades later, Americans in third world fashion suffered 5 Floridas. Well, he compared it to Florida back in 2000 and how that the controversy there was over one state. But now you had all these states in collusion, working together on election night, stopping the count, so that they could go out and find thousands upon thousands of bogus votes. Rudy Giuliani, he was on Lou Dobbs last night. I just want to find the clip. I believe this is clip number 3. Yeah, listen to Rudy Giuliani, one of the president's lawyers. He's talking here about some of the evidence that they're turning up in Michigan and Pennsylvania specifically. Here's clip 3.
On the morning of the election, every single one of those Democratic leaders woke up and said, we're going to block the Republicans from seeing any of the mail ballots. Since whenever we count absentee ballots, we know that we have to have a Republican and a Democratic representative. And the only reason they did that is because they knew they were going to need that room to make up for his margins. And here's where they got screwed up. The margins were much bigger than they anticipated. They were figuring they had to make up a couple 100,000 votes in Pennsylvania, maybe 100,000 in Michigan, maybe 80 or 90,000 in Wisconsin. Now they're looking at numbers like 800,000, 300,000, 400,000. They had to do plenty of cheating in the middle of the night in order to catch up.
That's why so many of these nefarious activities are almost laughable, because they were so far behind. They didn't anticipate the red wave being as big as it was. But they sure had the machines working, and they were ready to churn out as many votes as was needed. As I think one commentator said yesterday, no wonder Joe Biden stayed in the basement the whole time. They were all in on it. They knew it was rigged. He knew that no matter what happened, remember, as I said yesterday, they laid out the strategy 2 months before the election. They had been preparing for mail-in voting for 2 years before this, really going back years and years. They were practicing it in local levels. And then COVID-19 gives them the perfect cover. They had to extend that pandemic, the scare, the lockdown, all that stuff, the mask mandating. They had to continue on with that at least through the election. And President Trump was out there saying, you know, you're not going to hear much about the pandemic as soon as the election's over. But they had to continue with the scaremongering there. because that gave them the perfect cover. And yet even still, it's about to be blown wide open, like Giuliani said there, because it was cheating on such a massive scale, the likes of which this nation has never seen. Oh, really? The most secure election in the history of the United States? How about the greatest election voter fraud in history? How about that one? We'll see how much of it God exposes. But here it stretches across state lines. Democrats are in, the media were in on it. The Obama people, you can be sure. And then all of these states, all of these governors, all of these secretaries of state, all of these corrupt judicial branches like in Pennsylvania. Victor Davis Hanson says here, so the public is mystified that the center of global high tech, the bastion of transparency and civil rights, the birthplace of the computer, the internet, and automatic voting, home of the $4 trillion Silicon Valley Masters of the Universe, and the nation that vowed never again to suffer another 2000, the Florida fiasco, has again failed. A nation whose tech wizardry can ferret out a single improper tweet and block an individual account in a nation of 330 million surely can use such omnipresence to ensure a nearly instantaneous voting result in certified machines. But no, it's not like that. It's like in Zimbabwe. He says here, the media itself funded joint polls and reveled in their investments on television as gospel. On Fox News, Arizona was called. Well, he goes through some of the election night coverage, dreadful coverage, and then sums up. Hanson does. He says, we are a third world state now with malleable laws, an inert constitution, voting that cannot be certified beyond a reasonable doubt within a reasonable time, with a media that massages rather than reports the news, and pollsters who seek to modulate rather than reflect likely voting. Welcome to the new Zimbabwe. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
Herbert Armstrong wrote I believe this was in The Plain Truth back in 1966. It was this personal where he talked about, told his readers, okay, who's behind this magazine, this beautiful magazine that you receive each month, or the World Tomorrow radio program that you tune into? He was telling the viewers, the readers, a little bit about God's church. And he says here, we are a voice in the wilderness of ignorance, deception, frustrations, and lost hopes, preparing the way for the coming of Christ and the kingdom of God. He said, we are a light in the darkness, realizing fully that men, as in Jesus' day, still love darkness rather than the light, but proclaiming the truth as a witness nonetheless, in spite of opposition, persecution, and false accusation. That's the way God works, even in this world of darkness. If God's backing the organization, the movement, it still goes forward, fulfilling God's will. Even if there's a lot of resistance and opposition, even in a world so full of darkness, he writes, what a privilege. Yes, we are painfully aware of the pitiful conditions of so much of suffering humanity. We are heartsick and moved with sorrow and deep compassion. Yet we are privileged to herald in the power of the living God the good news of the deliverance and healing of these wretched peoples, thus helping speed that day, helping in the only way humans may help now. And so we rejoice and are overjoyed also. What a privilege, he says there, to be able to proclaim the truth of God, to bring joy, to bring truth. I went through 1 Corinthians 13 recently in epistles, that beautiful definition of God's love, and how that, among other things, it rejoices in truth. And so you see these prophecies being fulfilled, and of course a world that's agonizing under the weight of rampant sin. And that's not pleasant to observe. That makes you sigh and cry, as Ezekiel 9 says. You mourn. He saw the people of his day, and just because they didn't have a shepherd to guide them. And he mourned over their ignorance. But what a blessing, what a privilege it is to bring the truth to those who will hear it, even though most will turn away, even though most will reject it. That statement I just read to you, that really is a perfect reflection of the way God thinks. We come out of this wretched world and all of the pitiful conditions of this world of man, Satan's world, the present evil world, and then let our lights shine before men. We let that example show forth. We deliver a message of hope. And most, of course, won't listen until it's too late. John 3 and verse 19 says, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Human nature loves darkness. Human nature, like Brad McDonald wrote in that trumpet brief, they love to work under the cover of darkness, because that's where they can plan and plot all of their evil strategies. They're scheming. They're lying and deceit. They're cheating. They work under the cover of darkness. And in the case of the election, by the way, it was literally in the middle of the night, in the wee hours of the morning, 4 a.m., and the trucks show up from out of state, bundles of Biden onlys. Verse 20, it says, for everyone that doeth evil hates the light, neither comes to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth comes to the light, it says, and his deeds may be made, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. So many people today, they prefer darkness. They love darkness. They love thick darkness. And that's brought out in Isaiah 9 as well. We stumble. Isaiah 59, I should say. Again, go through that trumpet brief from last night. An excellent study. Powerful chapter. Isaiah 59. But we stumble around like a blind man. We're groping in the dark, spiritually speaking. Now, we saw the lights go out in an entire church era, or a church of God. All those things that Herbert Armstrong talked about in 1966, the Plain Truth, the World Tomorrow Program, Ambassador College, all these other projects and arms of the work, Satan blotted it out. Satan just blotted out that history. He blotted out that work. That's always been his goal. And like my father says in the latest coworker letter, it starts with spiritual Israel. And then we're seeing it brought out or carried out viciously against our own nations. And people up there, as you heard in the first segment, sounding like angels of light, but these are the ones that have been the most vicious, the most deceitful, the most dishonest. And God's exposing it. He's exposed a lot of it. And he's going to expose more. 2 Corinthians 4:4 says about the devil, in whom the god of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. This is a glorious gospel that we proclaim. This is a brilliant light for all the world to see. Jesus Christ, the return of Jesus Christ to this earth as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That is the light. Verse 6, it says, for God who commanded the light to shine out of darkness has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. That light shines out of darkness. You can look at John 1, where it says that Jesus was the light of men. He was the light of men from Why Humanity Can't Solve Its Evils. Mr. Armstrong wrote this. He said he's talking about the recreation week from Genesis 1 and then commenting on John 1. And he says here, is it mere coincidence that as the sun brought the light of day from the darkness of night on the fourth day of creation week, Christ brought the light of truth out of the darkness of evil after 4,000 years. There's a 7,000-year plan, in other words. And after 4,000 years, or after 4 days, then here comes the light into this world. John 1 and verse 5 says, and the light shines in darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not. Verse 6 continues, there was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, and all men through him, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, capital L, but was sent to bear witness of that light. He was sent to bear witness of the light that is Jesus Christ. And certainly that's what God's church has continued to do down through the ages. That same spirit, of course, God's worked through individual men along the way as prophets, apostles, and the church, those of us coming into the church, provide our enthusiastic support to that work of God. 2 Peter 1, just a couple more verses here. 2 Peter 1 and verse 18, it says, and this voice which came from heaven we heard when we were with him in the Holy Mount. Peter hearkening back to that vision of the kingdom that he saw, he witnessed. Verse 19 says, we have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed, as unto a light that shines in a dark place, until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts. See, that kingdom of God, that return of Jesus Christ, that vision of tomorrow, that's what needs to burn brightly in our minds, in our hearts. My father says this in his booklet on the Epistle of Peter, or the Epistles of Peter. He said, Christ will return. He will meet his saints in the air. And then the day star will rise in our hearts. He says, Christ in us will rise in our hearts. And in a sudden change, we will be the sons of God who look like Christ. And we will be the bride. We will be the bride. He goes on and says in this same booklet how that, you know, there's only so much that the church can do today. We're not trying to rule the world today, but we are certainly sounding the alarm. Soon God's going to turn over the reins of government and authority to this church. And we will, with Jesus Christ, rule the world. But right now, God has established his government in this church. And my father, in the latest coworker letter, he tells you right where it's leading. But we've got to have this vision of the kingdom burning brightly in our hearts and minds, especially so in this world of thick darkness. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you Monday.